Welcome to another episode of the Photo Facts Podcast. I'm Jim Felder.
I'm Robert Trawick.
Hey there, Robert.
Hello,
you're sitting
Jim.
In front of me again.
I know.
How is that possible?
Well, it's possible because we have determined that old photographers cannot get COVID.
Oh, is that right? Okay.
Yeah. You haven't seen a single photographer die from the COVID virus.
I haven't, personally.
I haven't either.
I haven't seen anyone die from the virus yet. I haven't, not personally.
Not yet?
No.
Oh, my God. We really shouldn't be playing light of this.
I know. It's a sad deal for some people.
It is. And we're not trying to be disrespectful to the people that have loved ones that have passed away. This is a very dangerous COVID. I heard on the news today that the United States, as a country, surpassed 100,000 deaths due to COVID.
Whoa. Okay.
Oklahoma, we're at 316.
316, period?
Yes, period. Oh,
okay.
316,
wow.
Period.
That's why I haven't seen any.
Okay. Well, I'm sitting here thinking like, okay, so there must be some other states with some staggering numbers that that have been lost due to this virus.
Hmm.
And, you know, without wanting to scare anybody, and it's my own personal opinion, I feel we're going to have a rebound of this.
A recurrence or resurgence or something. Yeah.
I think it's going to happen. You know, for the last week and a half, give or take, I've been obviously out and about a lot more in Oklahoma and downtown. I know you've been out doing real estate photography. Mm-hmm. And it's maddening to see the amount of people outside.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's kind of good and kind of bad, but I think that a lot of people could be sick here in the next 3 weeks.
Oh, don't say that. Because I'm out and about.
You are out and about.
I do wear a mask in the store, though.
But you do wear a mask, right?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, I was going to give a shout out to Roxy because I went and helped Roxy today. I didn't help her. I went
and observed
her taking some food photos at a restaurant.
Right.
And she walked in with her mask on. She had her mask on. And she said, hey, I forgot to tell you, but it's probably good that you wear a mask. I'm like, okay, cool. So I have a mask I keep in the car, put it on. We walk in the restaurant, nobody's wearing a mask. Because they're closed.
Like, oh,
they're
right.
They're
yes.
closed to the public at this sure. at this time.
Yes.
So, I mean, literally within 5 minutes, I was starting to sweat.
I'm starting to sweat right now.
Oh, I know. I know.
It's kind of toasty.
Well, crack that door open. We got a cross flow, I think.
Okay.
Whatever.
Well, hi, Roxy.
Okay.
She's not on the air. She's not here. But I guess we can do a shout out to Roxy, and that's perfectly okay. So anyway, so that was really fun, and we have a good show today. It's going to be pretty amazing.
Yeah, it is going to be amazing. I know I've said this on several other podcasts recent, the fashion ones,
right?
But I think this one's going to top it all.
I think so,
especially who the person is.
However, I want to bring to our listeners from the last podcast on Craig. That we had a long conversation with Craig about Capture One,
yeah.
Even after the show.
Yes, we did.
We did. And then when we got off the phone with Craig, Jim and I were talking back and forth, and he purchased Lightroom Pro. Capture One
yeah.
Pro. So have yes. you had a chance to, I mean, it's only been a week.
Well, I did.
Actually, it's only been 2 days.
No, it's been 2 days, yeah. I actually, the issue was not Capture One. I didn't even get to Capture One because you know, I'm going to do the whole merging. You know, I have to do the merge my brackets.
Oh, that's right, merge your brackets.
Right, and that didn't work out good at all. Aurora HDR, the batching is horrendous. So it may be something I'm doing wrong, but it's not good. But anyway, I digress. So let's move on.
Well, I like to digress in sometimes. Sometimes that works.
Yeah.
So that works good. So let's go ahead and do a little plug-in real quick.
Alrighty.
This podcast was recorded on the Rodecaster Pro, the world's first fully integrated podcast production console with 4 mic channels, 8 sound pads for triggering effects and music, the ability to bring in phone and Skype calls, and powerful onboard audio processing. It's the perfect solution whether you're just getting into podcasting or you're a seasoned pro.
Wow, I always love that.
I do too.
Shout out to our buddy, Mr. White, that created that for us.
Yep. Ryan's a cool dude.
He is totally cool guy. All right, so ladies and gentlemen, we want to bring online the one, the only, the fabulous, David Leslie Anthony.
How'd you like that? That was so gay.
Oh, my God.
That's awesome.
Unbelievable.
We're sitting here across the table from each other with the microphones, like eyeballing, like, okay, let's do this together. And that did come off
We actually held hands when we said that.
Yeah, we were going to sing Kumbaya, but we didn't. All right. Well, so welcome to the show, sir. We have reviewed your bio, your extremely long, prolific list of previous clients, and the incredible artwork that you have displayed on your website. And we're going to put all those links in the show notes for our listeners to find you. So, David, tell us a little bit about yourself so our listeners can get an idea who you are.
Well, I mean, I actually started as a photographer October of 1989. I started teaching myself photography in around the latter part of 86. While I was a creative director for a major hairdressing academy here in the United States and in England, and I got frustrated with the consistent head and shoulder shots that were prevalent in the beauty industry. I felt that if we were going to be talking about hairdressing being part of fashion, then the images should have a fashion look. And what was being done in the beauty industry was just standard head and shoulder shots. So I began teaching myself photography so that I could do my own photography. And during the course of doing that, my work got noticed by a couple of British designers who hired me to shoot a couple of their campaigns and so forth. And I got to the point in the beauty industry that I'd gotten as far as I could go until somebody died or retired. And so I retired from the beauty industry and launched my career in October of 89 as a quote unquote fashion photographer. Now, bear in mind, I really didn't know jack shit, you know, I realized, okay, let me backtrack here.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Go ahead.
I started my career in October of 89. I began going around to the different modeling agencies in Los Angeles, showing my beauty hairdressing photography, and started getting model testing. Elizabeth at Elite, which was... she was the director of Elite at that time, was a big help in starting me off. And pretty soon, within the first few months of March, I mean, months of 1990, I got selected to shoot the National Z Cavaricci denim campaign.
Wow, and I've seen some of those images.
These ads ran in Vogue, Glamour, Interview, all these different magazines with my name along the side. And from there, I got the CAD Clothing Company campaign. I started getting editorial work from various West Coast magazines. And I got to the point that I realized that it wasn't that I was any good. And this is... what I find, this is what separates young photographers today from photographers when I was starting out in the business. And that's young photographers today, if they get 10 or 15 likes on Instagram, they consider themselves legends. Whereas when I started, you didn't dare call yourself a photographer until you really knew what you were doing. And I realized that it wasn't that I was any good. It was that I had gotten lucky. I had taught myself how to develop film, and back in the early 90s, cross-processing of film was just getting started. And I had shot some color film, color transparency film, and I went to the photo store to buy developer, and I bought the wrong developer. I bought developer for C41 chemistry.
Oh.
And I developed the E6 transparency film in the C41 chemistry. And I was getting all these weird colors. So I went down to my friends at A&I Color Lab in Los Angeles, and I said, what did I do? And they said, well, you put it in the wrong chemistry. And they made contact sheets for me, and I was fascinated with these colors and things that I was getting. So I started filtering my lenses and experimenting with all different types of film, putting them in different developers, different temperatures, and so forth. And that was the style that got me hired for Z Cavalici.
Wow.
So anyway, in the middle 90s, like I said, I realized that it wasn't that I was any good, it's that I'd been lucky. So I made a list of 10 photographers around the world that I wanted to assist. And I got accepted by half of them, and I ended up moving to Paris, France. And the thing is that I learned a big lesson there.
Okay.
And that is, know how much your money is worth before you go to a particular country. It was one of those rare times that it was the French franc at that time. It was one of the rare times that the franc was worth more than the U.S. dollar. Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden, I realized that, you know, I got accepted as an assistant to a very well-known photographer who was shooting for French Vogue and all these other publications. And I didn't have the guts to tell him that I didn't have a place to stay because I was short of money. So I bought a sleeping bag and I lived in a hedge grove in a park in Paris for 2 months.
What?
And bathed in the park bathroom and until I earned enough money to get myself a small little place.
Oh my God. So you were assisting a high-end fashion photographer and you slept in a park for 2 months?
In a park, yeah.
Now, that's diehard, because you know millennials today would not do that.
Well, there's a lot of things that they wouldn't do that we did back then, and that was assisting. We would learn on set. We kept our mouths shut. You proved your work. You proved through the quality of your work, who you were. You let your work do the talking, not yourself.
Yeah, I think
there
that's a big
thing of having, 10 of my friends and my mom and dad love my work, so I must be amazing. There wasn't any of that shit.
So when you're assisting this wonderful talk, because obviously you must have learned something, otherwise you would not be in the position you are now. What were some of the biggest things you learned while you were assisting another photographer?
I learned something about style. And style is not the... Okay, you look at 99% of the young photographers today. They all look the same. You can't tell one photographer from another.
Mm-hmm.
The model stands there. They slap a Photoshop filter on. And they go and they pat themselves on the back and consider themselves wonderful. What I learned was that, you know, the physical look of the pictures are going to change as time changes, as fashion changes, as current affairs change in the world and so forth. But style is your point of view, and that is shaped by the life you have lived, the places that you've lived, the people that you've been around and have met, the experiences you've had. These all shape your style or your personal viewpoint. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So basically,
and
your style
that,
is personal
to
you.
That is what separates one photographer from another.
Wow. But I don't think a lot of photographers actually embrace that.
A lot of my shoots on, for example, on my website, a lot of the denim stores,
mm-hmm.
those are... those pictures came about through my remembering when I was a kid, how me and my friends used to stand and the attitude in our body language that we had at that time when we were wearing Levi's and things of that nature.
Wow, that is crazy. So basically you're saying that the style on how they're shooting is basically a combination of their experience that they have in their past. And you kind of like get those experiences and you bring it forward.
Your life shapes your style. Your life, the life you've had, the life you've experienced, shape your viewpoint. And the more you learn, the more you experience, the more your viewpoint is shaped and reshaped.
Wow. Okay, that's pretty heavy right now. So, you know, just based on that, I think it'd be very hard for someone in their first starting out without a, you know, decent portfolio or experiences, like you could probably say their style will change over time as they get more experience in life.
Well, yeah. I mean, some 19-year-old kid shooting a picture on and posting it on Instagram, where did they live?
Right.
They're probably still living at home. They just finished high school. What have they experienced?
Right.
It's like what I always tell my assistants. One thing I learned was that you had to, in order to create a future, in order to move into the future, you have to know the past. In other words, before you can create the future, you have to know the past, because it's the past coupled with the present that makes the future. Everything that I see being done in photography right now is what we were doing in the 90s.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I agree.
It's identical. And, you know, I laugh at these kids that, oh, I shot this on film like it's some big badge. No, I was watching some kid out a couple weeks ago. I was out on the balcony, and there was this kid shooting, and he would shoot a picture with a digital camera, look at the settings, and then put the settings on a film camera and then shoot the same thing. Yeah, the thing is they don't know. They don't know their equipment. They don't know, you know, they all buy the same film. And like I said, I mean, everything that I see being done right now is the same thing that we did in the 90s.
Right. I mean, I think they're doing the same thing. I mean, they've heard people like me that is a lot older than most talk about, you know, how we enjoyed film, how that was magical, and the color rendition that we were able to get by selecting different film emulsions. And now they're doing it. But so just because I want to get on my soapbox for 5 seconds, and you're welcome to join me, is...
I mean, all the work that I still do for Marie Claire and Harper's Bazaar for the international editions, I still shoot on film.
Still today you shoot on film?
Yeah.
Oh, bravo.
Film and digital. It depends on how much of lead time that I have.
That is excellent. But I hate it when they shoot film and they scan it.
For example, I don't mean to interrupt you.
No, go ahead.
If you go on the very first page of my website, Fashion, Harlem Nights, that was shot on Agfa 400 film. Very next story next to it, Marie Claire Latin America, that was shot on Tri-X film. The Courtship of Antoinette, that was done for Condé Nast, that was film. Harper's Bazaar, that's film. Yeah, all that. Fashion film, El Netherlands was film.
Sorry, do you scan any of your negatives or your...
I do high res scans of my negatives, and then from that point I'm working digitally anyway.
Right. Exactly. So in my mind, so help me understand. In my mind, now obviously you're in a different ball game because you're shooting commercially to a client that's going to go to print. But a lot of these young kids out here that shoot film because they want to discover the magic of film, they shoot it, they process it.
No, they want to discover the magic of film. It's that they want to do the same thing that everybody else is doing because they think it's hip and current.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, let's go with that. But once they scan it
okay,
and start...
I mean, let's say it exactly what it is. And if I...
No.
If I offend anybody...
Fuck them.
Oh, shit.
But once they scan it and they start manipulating that, they're just shooting digital the hard way. Because they're killing the analogness of the film. Like they're just...
Oh, absolutely.
It just... And I asked one, and a very... Like he's a local photographer, and I'm not going to say he's famous, but he's very well known, and he shoots a medium format film, scans it, and makes some really nice images. And I'm like, well, dude, why are you doing that? Why don't you print it on paper? And he said, if I print it on paper versus scan it, I won't be able to put it on my Instagram. And then I thought, That's it. That's the reason you're doing it. You're trying to make something to show on Instagram. You're not actually creating art or making an image. You're just trying to put something on Instagram. Just go back to shooting digital. Make your life easier. But I think you're right. These photographers these days, they're coming up without a personality and without life experiences. Can you hear me?
Sorry. You cut out the...
Oh, no. I was just saying that I just feel that a lot of the young photographers coming up without the life experiences are not able to make a decision. They don't have a direction in their life. They're just trying a little bit of everything, trying to figure out what works for them, and they wind up copying what hip people think they should be doing.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that when I started, there was only film. There was no digital. And we experimented with every type of film that we possibly could get our hands on. We worked with different chemistries. Working with film is how we created the looks that we had to our photographs and so forth.
Right.
We kept notebooks. We'd cut off pictures from contact sheets and paste them in our little notebooks and write notes of how we did it and so forth. And this is how we taught ourselves. Like these so-called cross-processing filters in Photoshop don't even come close to what we used to do with cross-processing, for example, Agfa tungsten film, Fuji tungsten film, Kodak EPN tungsten film. All of them would give different looks and different feels.
Right, and you had to actually do that process and save it to know what you were going to get.
Oh, absolutely. And just 1 or 2 degrees difference in temperature would change the look of the film as well. I don't know if you're in front of the computer.
Oh, absolutely.
Are you in front of the computer?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay, can you pull up my website?
I'm there.
Okay. See the third image over? It says, if you put your mouse over it, it says number 3 magazine.
Okay. Not here. Go to the homepage.
I'm on the homepage?
No, you're not. You're on about.
Oh, I'm on where it says fashion?
Yeah, he's on the about page. Hold on.
Okay, fashion. I'm on the fashion page.
Okay. Now, for example, if you click on Harlem Night, okay.
Number 3 magazine? Is that the one?
Number 3 magazine.
Yeah,
okay.
There you go.
If you click on that, look at those images there. Now, you see those multiple images?
Yes.
Yes.
That was not done in Photoshop. How I did that was, now I shot digitally, but I used all the same things that I did when I was shooting film. I made a background with 2 4-foot by 8-foot mirrors, and I set them on end, 45 degrees from each other. Got that?
Yes. Oh, my God, that's stunning.
Draw yourself a little picture there. Draw a 45-degree angle.
Okay, I'm drawing it right now on my pad.
Okay.
Okay, I'm on it.
Listeners, do this too.
All right. You drew a 45-degree angle, right?
Yes.
Okay. Now, between the two ends, draw a dot in the center.
Okay, like so between the corner and the edge.
Yeah, you know how when you make a 45-degree angle?
Yes.
Okay. And then right in the center, put a dot.
Okay.
So that it's directly behind where the two lines connect?
Correct, yes.
Okay. Now, in front of that, draw a straight line in front of that dot.
Okay.
That's the camera position. Now, what I did was I set up a black seamless in front and cut a hole. That's where the lens went through.
Oh, so you're not now, showing up in the reflection.
Now you have, how many reflections do you have there? from that point, what you have right there now.
I'm seeing two reflections, plus the real live image, so you'd have three.
You have four. You have four.
Okay, hang on.
You one gotta on the left, left side of the mirror, directly behind where the two sections intersect.
Oh.
One on the right-hand side, and then straight on to the model. That's four. However, you have six, because I used what we did in the film days when we wanted to create in multiple images. We used what was called a dual filter. A dual filter is a prism filter that throws the image back on top of each other. And thus, this was throwing the image, the reflections from the mirror, back on top of each other. Thus, you've got the six images, six different angles, and where one of the images fades into the other. Does that make sense?
Okay, now when did you shoot these images?
Scroll down and look at the images there.
Yeah, they're incredible. Love that.
But that is how I did that without Photoshop.
Wow, that's cool.
I mean, this is like, now, when did you shoot this? When did you shoot this, David?
Huh?
When did you shoot the set? Yes.
2014.
Oh, crap. So that's still pretty too new for me to copy that, because that's pretty badass. I'm just going to say.
Did you document this? Like, did you do any behind the scenes? Or do you want to share?
I never do. I mean, it's just, I'm totally into my job at the
time.
One, two, three. The fourth image down.
Okay.
You see the white marks on the image?
Yes, the little white spots.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now, that is a very, very... a very different photographic technique.
Well, please share, because I want to know.
I smudged my hands on the mirror.
Oh, wow. That's very technical right there.
Yeah, that's how I did that.
Now, do you do it on purpose, or did you make a mistake?
And then the colors, by the way, the lighting was two lights, one at each end of when you look at the outer edge of the mirror, where the two 45-degree lines, the end set is closest to where the black backdrop is.
Right.
I had one light head going at 90 degrees onto the model from one end, and from the other end, another light head 90 degrees. And both of them were gelled.
Yeah, I was going to say they're gelled. One's like a blue-green or something, and one's pink. Or something, right?
Cyan and magenta.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then what I do is instead of wrapping my gels tightly around the light head, I leave the ends open so that the gels fade into each other. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and that's why she's got more natural looking light coming on the front part of her, like her ear.
You don't see any hard lines.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's cool.
I'm actually writing this stuff down right now, David.
And I've experimented with gels, and but that's a good idea a very creative idea to do that, because I'm going to try that.
Now, to show you the difference between, say, for example, Agfa black and white 400 film, go back to the splash page where it says Harlem Nights.
Okay.
Click on that image, and... You see that was shot on Agfa black and white film, 400 ASA black and white film.
Okay.
Okay. You see how the grains, it seems tighter?
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Uh-huh. Got a good punch of contrast too.
Okay. Now go back to the splash page, and right next to it says Marie Claire Latin America.
Yes.
Click on that image. Now, the first image was shot on Tri-X black and white. See how it's a little grittier?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's cool.
Oh, yeah. That is, I see the grit in that Tri-X. That must have been before the T-grain technology.
Well, T-grain technology was out at that time, but Tri-X, there's no... Tri-X is Tri-X. It gives a grain structure that is just pure.
God, but you know what? I like Tri-X. I shot a lot of Tri-X when I was younger. I really liked the Agfa and the Ilford Black and White. I always felt it had a little bit more punch to it.
Yeah, it depends. I mean, the thing is that if we were shooting black and white film and we were shooting out in the natural light and we wanted to give the model a bit of a tan.
Right.
We would use a number 3 grade green filter on the lens.
Yeah, I think a lot of photographers don't.
We work with different filters. Now, the color shots that you see there, that's all Portra 120.
All right. Now, where did you shoot these at, David?
Both of these shoots, the Harlem Nights and the Marie Claire shoot, were shot in Chicago. The Harper's Bazaar, Latin America on the far end, that was shot in New York. Here's a good example. Go to where it says El Netherlands.
Okay, I'm looking.
Second row. Yeah.
Got it.
The model's wearing a white top.
Yeah.
Yep, I got it.
Okay, click on that.
Okay.
Okay, listeners, I hope you're following along.
Now, that's Tri-X 400 out on location.
Okay, I can see the grain in this in the background and the gray area. I can see it a lot more pronounced than I saw it in the other image.
Now, here's the thing is that with fashion, you have to really understand light because it's the quality of light that will make or break the fashion image. For example, you see all the detail in white there.
Mm-hmm.
Right, yeah. Right. You didn't blow out the highlights.
Okay.
Yep.
No, because I set the model directionally to the light.
Mm-hmm.
All right?
Wow.
The quality of light is what absorbs or reflects the fabric. Now, when I'm shooting, for different magazines and so forth, it's very important that if you're going to be a fashion photographer, you have to know and understand fashion. It's not, book a stylist and have them show up with whatever. The thing is that the fashion, because with Elle, Harper's Bazaar, Marie Claire, we're working anywhere from 4 to 6 months in advance. British Cosmo, we work generally 4 to 5 months in advance. And so you have to anticipate the direction of fashion and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
when that comes out.
Right. I was going to ask that.
And then also you're working with different demographics. How I shoot for Harper's Bazaar is not the same way that I shoot for British Cosmo because we're dealing with different demographics. And that's something that young photographers don't seem to understand is demographics. They all want to shoot for these different magazines, but the thing is that if you scroll down to you'll see where it says Cosmopolitan Little Black Dress, and then right next to it says Cosmopolitan UK Till the Sun Comes Up.
Yeah, I'm looking. Give me a second. Is it towards the bottom? I'm looking for the little back dress.
Yeah, down towards, scroll down. It's right underneath another Condé Nast.
Okay.
You see it?
Not yet.
What's the name of it? What's the name of it, David?
So if you put your mouse over any of the pictures, the name of the story will come up.
Right.
It comes. It says. It says Cosmopolitan UK till the sun comes up.
Got it. Well, it says
Cosmopolitan UK. Click on that.
Oh, hang on. This one's out west. This is not the right one. Let me go back.
No.
Let me go back.
It's on the left-hand side.
Left-hand side. Okay.
Scroll down. You'll see four models. One model's holding a balloon.
This one, Robert. Look at this face.
Oh, wow. Hang on a second. That four models holding a balloon. Am I not in the right?
Yeah, do you see it? Nope. Scroll down.
Okay, I'm.
You said Cosmopolitan UK till the sun comes up. Okay, yeah, it's this one right here, Robert.
God, you guys are like old men.
We are old men.
Well, we don't usually.
We're on it now.
Click on that. Now, this is British Cosmos. You see the difference in the style and the look?
Right.
Wait a minute.
How I shoot the images?
I've seen this before, David. Did you show this in the Fashion Connect forum?
In the what?
In the Fashion Connect forum? I've seen this.
But this is how, like I said, I'm dealing with... Cosmopolitan is a different demographics, and if you're wanting to show my editors, for example, your work, and all your models are just standing there staring up in the sky, they're never going to book you. They're never going to hire you.
Right. This is definitely a lot more fun lifestyle with a little elegant twist to it.
And the storyline that we took was that. It was a little black dress story, and the storyline that we took was that these models had been partying all night and that they were coming in early in the morning.
Wow. I don't know where I've seen this, David, but I've seen this. I have totally seen this, especially the girl with the pink balloons and the guy, and they're pulling this, like, wow.
Well, you probably saw it in the magazine, Robert.
Well, yeah, I probably saw it in the magazine.
right next to it where it says Cosmopolitan UK behind the scenes, that's the video of the shoot that Cosmopolitan did while we were shooting. Cool. Because on Cosmopolitan's website...
That's where I saw it at. That's where I saw it.
They'll show behind the scenes of how the stories were created.
And that's on this page somewhere?
Yeah, right next to it. It's right next to Cosmopolitan UK. See where it says Cosmopolitan little black dress?
Okay. Hang on.
It was right next to the thumbnail that you're just looking at. Cosmopolitan UK.
Yeah, behind the scenes. It has the logo that says Cosmopolitan on it.
Yeah, it says Cosmopolitan UK behind the scenes. If you put your mouse over any picture, the title of the story comes up.
Okay, yeah, I got that.
We're like old men trying to use a digital camera.
No shit. I'm driving Miss Daisy with you guys.
Oh my God. Okay, so that's incredible. We've talked about some different styles. So David, you've talked a lot about how this thing was some time ago. How has the fashion industry evolved to today? I mean, you're still a working fashion photographer traveling the world. What differences do you see today? Maybe you're having a hard time swallowing with some of these things. I mean, I got to imagine that some editors you have to deal with or ADs are just difficult.
Well, what's happening is... How do I put this?
Just spit it out.
The young the established magazines are still working with the established photographers. It's the online magazines. I won't shoot for any online magazine. If it's not a real magazine, I don't consider it a magazine. These online magazines, these are the ones that the young kids are putting their work on. And there's really no rhyme or reason. The online publications go, submit your story. So you'll submit one. What's your partner's name?
Jim.
Yeah, that's me.
Yes. You'll submit one. Jim will submit one. Joe Blow submits one. And you've got all these different stories, right?
Right, right.
And none of them are cohesive to each other, but you've got another young 20-something who considers themselves an editor, and they're putting, you know, they're making these online magazines. Well, I've spoken to my editors at Harper's Bazaar and at British Cosmo and Reclair, and they told me right out, David, we never even look at those.
Wow.
You know, we have no, you know, those are not the caliber of photographers that we want.
Wow.
And, you know, the other thing is that these are this, none of these photographers are being hired by the big advertising campaigns to be shot. Because if you look at these online magazines, there's no advertising in them, is there?
No, you're
so
right.
Who the hell is looking at them? I forgot, your mom and dad.
Oh, my God.
Okay, so on that note, I'm going to come chime in here. So all that being said, David, what can these young photographers, quote, young photographers or millennials or whatever, these people that aren't shooting up to par, what do they need to do? What can they do to better themselves to possibly be in your shoes or follow in your shoes, you know, not to replace you, but just to follow what you're doing?
Look at all the different Vogues that you have. You got American Vogue, you got German Vogue, Russian Vogue, French Vogue, Italian Vogue, Czechoslovakian Vogue, Vogue Japan, all these different Vogues, right?
Right, right.
And if you look at each one of them, they're all different from each other. That's called demographics.
Right, yes.
All right. And then look at the different Harper editions of Harper's Bazaar. Look at the different edition. Look at the difference between British Cosmo and American Cosmo.
Right, it's almost like a complete different magazine that shares the same masthead.
Exactly. So what you have to have is a range. A range doesn't mean a different style for different things. You have to be able to adapt your viewpoint to the demographics or the readership that magazine is dealing with.
Oh my God, I'm writing this down like crazy.
You just looked at some things on my website. You saw the difference between...
Oh, yeah.
You saw how I shot that one story for Marie Claire, for example. Then you saw El Netherlands. And then you looked at British Cosmo.
Okay, so what did you do when you were first starting out? Did you follow a photographer? Did you research? What did you do to learn that demographic? What did you do to get up there and be noticed?
Well, a lot of it came from working and assisting in Paris, because at that time in the 90s, Paris was the place for young photographers to go to hone and learn their style, to learn their craft. That was the place to be. And, you know, because you also had, besides the Paris market, you could take the train and go down to Barcelona, to Madrid. You got Lisbon, Portugal. You had all these different markets that you could go and show your work to. Just like going to a different state.
Right.
And the thing is that it really comes down to, you know, wanting to be the very best that you can be. You got to remember, there wasn't social media then. And
right.
So we weren't there sitting there trying to impress other people with what we were doing. We weren't there taking pictures of ourselves on a photo set and stuff like that.
Okay.
No, we were there for business.
David,
we
you never took a selfie with one of the hot models?
Because the photographers that I wanted to compete with were the Peter Lindberghs, the Paolo Reversis, and the Craig McDeans, the Nick Knights.
Wow.
Who were very, very big and prevalent at the time that I was starting in the business.
Okay, so still, I mean, I'm a young photographer. Not I'm not saying me, but I'm young at heart. Yeah, but I'm a young photographer, and I'm excited about getting into fashion. And I'm in Oklahoma, or maybe I'm in Virginia, or I'm in Texas, whatever. So I'm excited, and I'm listening to this podcast, and I'm a little discouraged because I'm like, oh, I didn't get to shoot in Paris. What am I going to do? I don't have Paris at my
you can get cheap
on my
flights.
Fingertips.
You can get cheap flights to Paris
well,
right now.
I get that, but I don't have that at my disposal. So what do I need to do?
If you can't be at the runway shows, go on to Vogue.com and HarpersBazaar.com and click on the runway shows. Get to know and understand the style of the fashion directions and so forth. And then if you don't have those kind of stores, take some screenshots. And if you don't have those kind of stores, you know what I did?
Tell me.
I didn't have access. I didn't have that when I started out. I didn't have access to all the, the Marc Jacobs and Yves Saint Laurent clothes and things like that. But what I did was I would care. Again, the internet wasn't around then yet.
Yeah.
But I would tear pictures out of the magazines and I would go to the thrift stores and look for things that were along the same lines.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah. Same kind of style of clothing.
That's how I started off with the looks and so forth.
So basically, no fashion. And then trying to emulate what is already being done right now, so you can get noticed.
Well, if the fashion direction was strong silhouettes and so forth, then I would go to the thrift stores and look for clothes that had strong silhouettes.
Right, gotcha. Okay, so along those lines, so let's touch on something else. You know, I'm trying to get published in Photo Vogue. Can you give me some tips on that?
Okay. Photo Vogue is a website, right?
Yes.
It's not a publishing medium.
Oh, I thought if I got on there and got accepted, like I was in the magazine.
those websites like Model Mayhem and One Model's Place.
Yes, yes.
You can create a profile and put your pictures up there, right?
Yes,
right.
Yes.
Well, Photo Vogue is essentially the same situation. The difference being is that you can only upload a couple of pictures at a time, and whoever they have, it may be editors, it may be sub-editors, I don't know. But they'll select what you can put up on your personal web page and what you can't. And the reason for this is that they want all images to be in the same aesthetics of Italian Vogue.
Right.
In other words, they don't want the Model Mayhem crap on there. And if you go onto the website and click on Manifesto, it says how to join Photo Vogue. One, join and create your portfolio. Yeah.
Right,
so
right.
In other words, you get to create your own page.
Yes.
All right, that is not being published. You submit your photographs to be allowed to be put on your web page. The difference being is that the editors will approve what can be put on your web page, and then they watermark it with the Vogue watermark on the left side of the photograph, where these young kids think, oh, I was published. No, you're not. It's a fucking website.
Well, let me tell you, David, do you know how many photos?
If you create a page on Model Mayhem, were you published on Model Mayhem?
Oh. No. It's a website. But let me tell you, guess how many images I have on Photo Vogue, and I have been submitting for 4 years now. Guess how many?
Tell him.
I don't know.
Zero. Not a damn one.
Well, the thing is are you really looking at the aesthetics of Photo Vogue?
You know, I got. I actually look at
and
it.
That again comes down to the demographics. If you want to shoot for British Cosmo, you have to understand their demographics. And not only is the photography looked at, but the style of the clothing is looked at. The caliber of the models are being looked at. And right now, with the way that fashion is going, you're better off photographing your next door neighbor than what is passing for models these days.
You know what? I can definitely understand that. And I'm the first to admit that I would like to call myself a fashion photographer, but I'm not even close. I don't understand fashion. I just like shooting pretty things, wearing pretty clothes in exotic locations.
So David, do I need to go find a
I got news for you. Oklahoma isn't a fucking exotic location.
Oh, my God.
Okay, that's one of those yippee-ki-yay places.
Yeah,
that's funny.
That is hilarious. That's hilarious. Okay,
so,
Jim.
So if I go find a long, tall, lanky, skinny-ass woman with no boobs, then she probably is going to fit the part.
You know what I honestly think could pass on Photo Vogue?
Yeah.
Is if you took a model, put her in denim. Go on to my front page of my website again.
Okay.
And one, two, the third row down to the right, you'll see a guy, a male model and a female model in denim. Art Plus Design Magazine, A Sense of Rebellion.
Hang on, I'm looking for it.
Oh, come on, Helen Keller, let's go.
Got it. I'm on it. It was in black and white. It was hard to see the denim, damn it.
Click on that.
Yes. All right, okay. I'm here.
Now, if you put denim on a model, it doesn't mean you have to put it exactly on. You see how disheveled we have the denim?
Oh, yes, absolutely. It definitely looks like a wreck.
Okay, now what if you're in Oklahoma? What if you put a model in denim like that and put them out in the middle of a pasture and you had some cows around it and you photograph it just strong and bold? I'm being serious.
Yes,
now.
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to try it.
And you photograph the model as if she could give a shit.
Right.
Fashion is looking at as this normal in a totally different way. I mean, if you scroll down 1, 2, 3, 4, the fifth photo down, you see how I had the stylist wrap the denim around the model's head?
Yes, I've actually seen that one before that you showed me, and that is absolutely crazy. Wasn't that on the cover?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the cover shot, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, I shot it in both black and white and color.
Wow.
You physically changed the film to black and white, or you shot it that way. You didn't post process.
I shoot with three cameras on set.
Okay.
Wow.
One's loaded with black and white. The other one's loaded with color.
Okay, and this guy's wearing his pants on inside out.
The year, whether I shoot Nikon or Canon, you know, you'll have these arguments. Canon's better. Nikon's better. They're both the same. The difference being, and I spoke with the technicians in both Nikon and Canon about this, and the only difference is the sensor.
Right.
Canon based their sensor off the population, Japanese population of the north, who have paler complexions, more neutral complexions. Nikon based their sensor off the population of the south, which is a warmer complexion. So during the summer, when there's a lot of natural warmth in the air, I'll shoot with Canon because it's a cooler sensor. During the winter, when I want natural warmth, I shoot with Nikon.
Wow.
That's a first. I haven't heard that one, but you know what you're doing. So that's
wow.
Cool. That's a different take.
If you scroll down at the very bottom, you'll see the color image of the model, which was the cover.
Okay, I'm going down to the bottom
magazine,
here.
The magazine published two covers, one with a male model and then one with the female model.
Okay, I'm working way to... Oh, got it. Yes, that's the one I saw in color. Now that now that's the style, is just basically wrapping a pair of pants and looks like maybe a jacket or something on the model's head.
Yeah, and tying it up and stuff like that. So why couldn't you take that same approach and tattered denim and photograph it in a field, say around 6 p.m. at night when the light is warmer and directional.
Right, right.
And shoot it around some cows and have the model stand there like she could give a shit. Think about it,
Dave. I'm going to do that. I am going to do that.
Things in different, in alternate ways.
Thank you, David, for that inspiration.
Thank you, David, because I feel that we may have to have a Photo Facts podcast photo contest on the David Leslie Anthony photo shoot.
Yeah.
Who's going to recreate that?
I hope you're stepping cow shit.
Well, trust me, we're in Oklahoma. We're going to hit it.
No, we'll have a cow tipping and cow chipping contest.
That will happen pretty quick, no doubt at all. Okay, David, well, we're getting ready to wrap up, coming close to our hour. So leave us with some good news about the industry now. Where do you see the industry in fashion going in the next 5 years?
Oh, geez.
No magazines, everything online, everybody shooting with iPhones?
Well, I think that things like this pandemic has caused publications to become more online. I think that that the magazines will still maintain a standard of quality, because if they don't, then they become no better than the online magazines, with mundane crap on it.
Right, right.
What's going to happen is, it's like any market, the cream will rise to the top.
Oh, absolutely, without a doubt.
Yep.
All right, well, David.
You'll see more e-com, as more and more people do their shopping online, you'll see more e-com. I'm really not happy about that, because it causes photographer rates to go way, way down.
Yes, absolutely. But do you think that even with the increase of e-com, that there's going to be a resurgence of the good days of fashion, where we would fly to the islands in wintertime to shoot, spring and summer fashion?
Well, let's put it this way. I received an email from a producer from a company that's first letter starts with N, the last letter starts with E, and it's four letters.
I know what that one is.
Asking me if they loved my work and thought that they had seen on my advertising section. You'll scroll down, and you'll see a model with a red top, a red shirt on. It says Von Dutch.
Okay, hang on. I'm going to it now. Give me a second. Almost there.
Come on, Daisy.
Come on, Daisy. Okay, I'm looking at it. All right, I'm there.
Okay. They saw that image. Click on it, you'll see the second image with that. They saw that and said, my work would be absolutely perfect for that, and that they would love to have me shoot some e-com for them, and they paid $15 an hour.
What?
Oh, gosh.
I can make more money shooting food for DoorDash with no experience.
This way, I would rather order Domino's. I didn't even bother answering. It was an insult.
Wow. I can't believe they would even do that.
Wow, that's crazy.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, do you think they were fishing to see if you would bite? I mean, because that's just ludicrous amount of pricing.
Seriously? Young photographers are doing that.
Well, yeah, that
they
is.
They really are.
That is definitely something
so
to happen.
That becomes a new norm, and because you've got all these young photographers so willing to, so hungry to be shooting for a client, they're doing it.
What do you think that a lot of that is because the young photographers?
Here's a comparison for you.
Go ahead.
When I shot the Calvin Klein in-store and in-store transit and store department campaign. All right, it was a one-week shoot.
Mm-hmm.
Total shoot budget was $496,800.
Whoa!
I should send you the breakdown.
Oh my God!
That was for a one-week shoot. Now, all right, travel for me and the crew was $44,000. Backdrops $4,000. Miscellaneous $7,000. Production $13,500. The makeup and hair artist made $33,600 for the week. The stylist made $25,600 for the week. The studio rental was $10,000. The extra equipment that I had to rent was $10,000. Additional material based on film processing and Polaroids was $7,500. I had two assistants, and that total came to $6,600. You know what I made?
What did you make?
For 1 week, $180,000.
Dude. Are you taking interns right now?
So you think I'm going to shoot for $15 an hour? Fuck off.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. David, you are absolutely amazing. You are a breath of fresh air, and we really appreciate you being an industry leader and at least helping these people understand what's coming from. I'm sure that we're going to get some great hate mail, and I'm looking forward to it. Because
I hope we get something.
I hope we get some hate mail because, you know, I think that when you're at the status that you're shooting at right now, at that level, I think that the way that we can grow the industry is expect everybody to rise up to your level and you not lower to theirs. So, bravo.
Yeah.
The thing is you have, you know, it's not coming up to my level. It's establishing a level for yourself. You know, you have to look at your self-worth. Are you that desperate to be shooting that you're going to shoot yourself in the foot? You know, the thing is that, you know, two things here that that I'll pass on to your people.
Yes.
And that's if they get you, if they can get you for a nickel, they'll never pay a dime.
Ooh.
Oh,
I like that.
Okay. And the other thing is that when you are looking at clients that you would like to work for, we always remember this. It takes the same amount of effort to go after the bottom as it does the top. Which one gives you the most rewards?
Oh, dude.
That's our soundbite right there.
David is laying down some truth. Hashtag truth.
There you go.
Yeah, but seriously, if a client gets you for 5 cents, why would they ever pay you a dime? They'll find somebody else that'll work for 5 cents.
That's exactly right. So basically, I think that it's imperative that as photographers and creative artists, that we're the ones that set the standard. We don't let the other people set the standard on what they're going to pay. We just say, this is what we're going to do, and either we did it this price or we don't do it at all.
Yeah.
You know, when I get approached by a client, that I've never worked with before, and they ask me what I charge. I ask them what their budget is. What have you thought about a budget?
Right.
Because if before you can make before you can give them an estimate, you have to know if they've even thought about a budget.
Yeah. Can they afford you at all? Or where, you know,
exactly.
Yeah.
Wow, that's crazy.
I'll email you a couple things from.
Oh, I would love that. Yes. Yes, Jim and I will definitely like guard that with our life.
So, David, just tell us where can we find you if they're listening right now? Should they go just to davidleslieanthony.com?
Oh, no, it's .us.
Yeah.
No, it's .com.
Is it .com?
Yeah.
No, .com is my fashion and commercial site. DavidLeslieAnthony.us is my gallery site because my work is also in galleries.
Okay.
And then you're on. It's funny. I didn't set out, you know, I never set out to, oh, I'm going to do some gallery work. It never came to that. What ended up finding their way into galleries was work that I had done simply for myself.
Mm, yeah.
Shooting for myself.
Right.
It wasn't for anything else. And it.
Yeah, the Lost Dreams and Memories. I like those shots you have in there, especially the one with the chairs stacked, where it looks like it was a slow exposure, and you have like a little multiple exposure going on.
Which one is that you're looking at?
Let me get close to it. It's of on Lost Dreams and Memories, the third shot where you have the looks like stacked chairs.
Is it on Fashion?
No. It's on your gallery. Yes.
U.S.
Yes, on the U.S.
Okay. That was simply an empty, vacant school that had just been empty since time.
Wow.
All right, well, we're going to have to wrap this up, but just stay where you are, David, and we'll close this thing out, and we will...
Right, stay on the line. We're going to go ahead and close out for our listeners and finish up the podcast, and then we're going to come back to you here shortly, okay?
All right.
David, thank you so much for everything. We'll make sure we put all the links to your social media and your website in the show notes to our listeners, and we're going to wrap this up. Just stay on the line, David. Thank you so much for being with us.
All right, thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening. You can find Jim at jimfelder.com and Robert at treywickimages.com. Send us an email at twins@photofaxpodcast.com or voicemail at 405-585-6337.
Check out our YouTube PhotoFax channel for weekly tips and tricks. Visit our Facebook page for news and discussion. Please help others find this podcast by reviewing us on iTunes. We really appreciate your support.